Okay, I did not hear what was.
It's the consent calendar.
Yes, yes, vote yes.
Thank you. The consent calendar is passed, and that includes resolution numbers SCV-369, SCV-370, and SCV-371.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll move on to action items. The first one being action item number 6.1, approve adopting a resolution to approve the initial study mitigated negative deck under the California Environmental Quality Act and a purchase order to Hazen and Sawyer for final engineering services for the S Wells PFAS treatment and disinfection facility project to be presented by Orlando Moreno.
Thank you, Vice President Goodsite. Again, my name is Orlando Moreno. I'm a senior engineer and project manager on the S Wells PFAS treatment facility project. Before we start the presentation, I'd like to introduce a couple of folks that are here present, and as well as an individual that's joining us by Zoom. Jennifer Haddo from Rincon. She's one of our environmental consultants. We have Rick Vergutz, our principal planner from our water resources department. And then on Zoom, we have Christopher Julian, also from Rincon, and they'll be assisting us in answering any questions during Q&A session. So thank you all for attending. So we can start with the presentation, please, April. We can start with slide number 2, please. Okay, so the agency operates 3 groundwater wells called the S6, S7, and S8 wells. These wells are located in the Bridgeport community, just north of the Santa Clara River. Those wells produce, each produce about 2,000 gallons per minute, or permitted to produce 2,000 gallons per minute, or a total of 6,000 gallons per minute in total there. These 3 wells were taken offline due to detection of PFAS that exceeded or exceeds the state's response level. S6 has been inactive since December of 2019. S7 and S8 has been inactive since March of 2020. And so those wells have been inactive ever since, and this project intends to remove PFAS and bring those wells back online. Next slide, please. So staff explored several potential sites for the treatment facility. As you can see on this slide, we looked at various locations. A lot of these locations were unfortunately unsuitable. Some of them were just too close to residential areas. Some were just too small an area for the size of the treatment we needed. And others were just within the Santa Clara River floodplain or within environmentally sensitive areas. So unfortunately, these were not suitable sites for us. Next slide. However, we did find one location, a viable location, an undeveloped area within the Bridgeport community, just east of the existing S wells, just south of the Bridgeport Park and north of the Santa Clara River bike trail. This property is owned by the city of Santa Clarita, and the agency intends to lease this property as a long-term lease through a long-term lease agreement. We found this site to be favorable due to its proximity to the S wells and nearby water public infrastructure. The nearest dwelling unit is over 400 feet away, so it's far away from any residential areas. Also, there are several large mature trees that surround the site, so it naturally screens this property. And then, of course, the site is outside of the river floodplain and outside of any environmentally sensitive areas. Next slide. So we contracted Michael Baker International to develop a preliminary design report. They assisted us in preparing this preliminary site plan that you see in front of you here. The facility will include a pre-filter assembly. They're shown in blue. Water will be conveyed to up to 8 ion exchange vessels, above ground ion exchange vessels on the south side there. You can see that in green. And then also the facility will contain a one-story chemical building that would house a hypochlorite generation system and a liquid ammonium sulfate feed system as well. And so all the water would be In essence, all the treated water would be conveyed north across to Bridgeport Park and connected to our Valencia water system. So as described in the final MND, we also plan for a new well to be constructed at the site, which we call the S9 well. You can see that location here in yellow on the site plan. This well is intended to be a replacement well, which will allow our agency the flexibility to add a new well at the site should one of our existing wells fail or become inoperable. The new well will not be included as part of this project's final design efforts. However, the site will be designed to accommodate and provide provisions for the future well if and when it is needed. We do expect that the new S9 well will contain PFAS, which will be removed at this facility. Next slide. The project includes several offsite improvements, as you can see on this exhibit. New water and storm drain pipelines will be installed across Bridgeport Park, as well as along the existing bike trail there north of the Santa Clara River. All hardscape and landscape areas would be replaced as necessary. We also anticipate some minor street improvement work along the roundabouts that are nearby this facility. And so as part of our final design, we are going to look at the possibility of protecting those roundabouts as much as possible. So that will be forthcoming. I'd like to also note that all the work will be located outside of the Santa Clara River. No work will occur within the jurisdictional areas designated as Waters of America. Therefore, a 404 stream bed alteration permit will not be required from the Army Corps. Next slide, please. Staff retained MIG Consultants. They're a landscape architecture and community engagement firm who assisted us in conducting two public engagement meetings. The first meeting was held at Bridgeport Elementary School on August 31st of last year. We had 12 members of the community attend that meeting. We had several staff members as well as board members attend that. So thank you all for attending that meeting. We followed up with a second meeting, which was provided virtually through Zoom on November 2nd. During those meetings, we introduced the project, provided an open forum for the community to provide comments, express their concerns, and share their ideas. We also answered questions related to the environmental documents and provided updates on when the MND was set to be publicized for public comment. During these public meetings, we received excellent feedback from the community. That was the intent. We were committed to getting as much feedback as we could from the public on this important project. And I think we succeeded in that. So what we're hoping to do is collect that information, that input, and use that toward our final design as we move forward. Next slide, please. So here's an example of a landscape plan that was prepared to incorporate the comments we received from the community. Obviously, maintaining aesthetic value in this area is really, really important for those folks there. So we had several requests for adequate landscape screening around the facility. Some prefer landscape that would blend in with the neighborhood. They wanted more of this green year-long planting. And others wanted more native, drought-tolerant landscaping. So the solution was, well, let's give them both. Let's do a combination. Why don't we go ahead and incorporate some of the more green landscaping along the north side that kind of blends in with that neighborhood and that community while providing more of the drought-tolerant native vegetation on the south side that can blend in with the river. So that's something we're going to be looking at during final design. Next slide, please. Another concern we heard from the community was the height of the perimeter walls around the facility. We need these tall walls because the ion exchange vessels are really tall. So to address this, the design team proposed to install a depressed slab to bring down the profile of that vessel and then trying to bring down the wall of the site and the facility there. So those are the things that we're going to look at as far as part of the design. I do want to mention that we will be installing drain inlets in this depressed slab so that we collect any runoff. I know that was one of the questions we had in our engineering committee. Next slide, please. Here we got a rendering of what this facility may look like. As you can see, lush vegetation and planting along the frontage of the site, some decorative paneling and decorative wall system to kind of make it blend in with the community there. Next slide. Okay, so moving on to CEQA, staff retained Rincon Consultants, an environmental consulting firm that prepared the project's initial study, mitigated negative declaration, and mitigation monitoring and reporting program, or what's called an MMRP, all prepared in accordance with CEQA guidelines and regulations. A notice of intent and draft MND were advertised and released for public review from November 18th through December 19th of 2022. The notice was published in our local newspaper and filed electronically for public review as required by CEQA. In addition, the agency voluntarily notified the residents of the Bridgeport community through an email announcement. Comment letters were received from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, Caltrans, the State Water Resources Control Board, SCOPE, and the Friends of the Santa Clara River. We also received two emails from members of the community, and formal response letters were provided to those stakeholders, and they're included in the final MND and also included in your packet tonight. Next slide, please. I'd like to touch a little bit about on the comment letters we received from SCOPE, the Friends of the Santa Clara River, and the emails from the two community members. Those comments were unfortunately not submitted to our agency representative as instructed in the MND notice. Instead, the comments were submitted to an email that was set up for our community engagement process. Unfortunately, emails from that account were not automatically sent to me or my staff. And so staff was not aware that those comments had been issued until just hours before our June 6th board meeting. So due to this email glitch, staff made a decision to remove this agenda during our June 6th board meeting, allowing staff to provide an official response to these comments and provide the commenters additional time to review our responses and review the updated MND before tonight's meeting. The response letters were sent to these commenters just over 3 weeks ago on June 23rd. We had not received a response until 5:13 p.m. this evening. A second letter was received from the Friends of the Santa Clara River, basically containing the same comments that were submitted in their first comment letter. Staff feels that we have adequately responded to their comments and our responses included in the MND and provided in your agenda tonight. Next slide, please. Can we go back one? Sorry, April. There we go. Okay, so the final MND indicates that the project may potentially impact several environmental resources listed in the first column of this slide, and concludes that these impacts can be avoided or reduced to less than significant with implementation of several mitigation measures outlined in the MMRP. A list of the mitigation measures are provided in this middle column of this slide. I would also point out that these mitigation measures are pretty common for a project of this complexity, though Bio3 is a bit unique, and I'll talk about that the next slide here. So I'll touch a little bit about on the CDFW comment letter we received. CDFW expressed concern that pumping from the existing S wells and future S9 wells could have a significant impact to the surrounding unarmored three-spine stickleback and any of the surrounding groundwater-dependent ecosystems, or what we call GDEs. Since pumping may potentially lower groundwater and deplete surface water from the Santa Clara River. They also had concerns that the project could divert surface water from the river if all the wells were put back in service. So in our response to CDFW, we had indicated that the combined pumping from all the S wells, all four S wells, will not result in a significant impact for the following reasons. First, SCP Water intends to pump the four wells in a manner that will not exceed the quantities that were modeled in the groundwater sustainability plan. And that GSP established groundwater trigger levels, which are in place to protect those GDEs. And second, we've included mitigation bio three, which states that the agency will monitor groundwater levels in the river in accordance with the GSP. If groundwater level trigger levels are reached, then the agency will evaluate to determine whether the pumping is causing it. If it is, then the agency would move forward with what's called management actions, which may include a reduction in the pumping or completely taking those pumps out of service. And again, all in accordance with the GSP. Next slide, please. Actually, before we go on to the next slide, April, I do want to mention CDFW also expressed concerns about the potential impact to the nesting least belvarials near the project site. They had requested that we expand our bio mitigation bio four. We went ahead and did that. So basically, we've increased the number of protocol surveys or pre-construction surveys from 3 to 8. So that's been included in the latest MND. And finally, on CDFW, I'd like to note that staff was recently in contact with CDFW. They have indicated that our responses were satisfactory and they had no further comments. Next slide, please. All right, so moving on to design consultant selection. Staff distributed requests for proposals for design services to 9 on-call civil engineering or engineering firms through Planet Bids. We received 3 proposals. The proposals were reviewed and scored by our internal review committee based on project approach, project team makeup, project schedule, and firm qualifications. Hazen and Sawyer Inc. received the highest score and staff recommends that they be awarded the project. Next slide. So Hazen and Sawyer's total engineering fee design for services is a little over $1.4 million. The fee includes subconsultant services such as surveyors, geotechnical engineers, structural engineers, architects, and landscape architects on this complex project. So we have $2 million allocated for design services in our fiscal year 23-24 CIP budget, which will cover the design costs. We're also receiving $5 million in grant funding from the Bureau of Reclamation through their SMARTS program, which staff is excited about, obviously. And we're also actively pursuing other grant opportunities for this particular project. I also would like to point out that the project meets our strategic plan objective D.2, which states that the agency will proactively install, operate, and maintain groundwater treatment infrastructure to avoid impacts on water supply reliability. Okay, next slide. On schedule, with your approval tonight, we expect to commence design early next month. It'll take about 12 months for design process to go through, so we should be going to bid sometime in July of next year. Project construction will take about 18 months, so we're expecting to be completed by July of 2026. Grant is due, the $5 million grant deadline is December of 2026, so we have about a 6-month cushion there to complete the project. Next slide. So to conclude, we recommend that the Board of Directors adopt a resolution approving SWELL's PFAS groundwater treatment and disinfection facilities project initial study, mitigated negative declaration, mitigation monitoring reporting plan, and authorize a purchase order to Hazen and Sawyer's consultants for an amount not to exceed $1,425,505 for design services for the SWELL PFAS treatment and disinfection facility project. I know that was a long one, so I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a procedural question for Mr. Byrne. Is this one vote or two?
One vote.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just covering both items. Okay. Any public comment, either in person or online, April?
There is not.
All right. And we did receive one additional comment letter. You mentioned that in your presentation. We all have it, and you had no further response to that letter.
That's correct.
But you saw it. Okay.
Yes, we reviewed that, and we feel that our responses in the MND are adequate.
All right, thank you. All right, we will proceed with director discussion then. Anybody have questions or comments? Director Cully.
Yeah, I do have a question. The slide said potential 5 million from the Bureau of Rec. Is that, and your word said we had. So I just wanted clarification. Is that something in our pocket or we're applying for?
We have.
We have it. Okay. Thank you.
It will go to President Martin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Orlando, excellent presentation. I want to thank the staff for going the extra mile to solicit and receive public input from the residents in that area. I think it was very important to them, and the responses appear to be really quite good. And I'm hoping that we'll have a project that will be the local residents will appreciate. So thank you, Orlando, and I intend to support this, okay. This item.
All right, is the Zoom meeting is over?
Thank you, Director Martin. Director Cooper.
This item was reviewed at the Engineering and Operations Committee and comes with the committee's recommendation for approval. I think they've met all of the items satisfactorily in the CEQA. I think the only one that was really a concern was the additional well and whether that needed CEQA, but apparently it does not. That we're not going to exceed the pumping capacity of what the existing wells are there now. So with that, it comes with the, and I would so move the recommendation.
Director Armitage.
Okay, so first of all, thank you for your presentation. Thank you for information to you and your team. The first thing I want to say is I do fully support the installation of PFAS treatment facilities because, you know, we absolutely need these facilities installed to serve clean and safe water to our community. And it's a foundational part of our mission. I wish we were taking two votes on this. I feel like we're kind of asked to make one decision on a little bit of what I feel is a mixed bag. The first area where I feel like there's kind of an unfortunate mixture is the fact that the review is for the PFAS treatment facility, but also for a brand new well, which is huge. And so I feel like it's the way it's presented in the memo, it's a bit confusing because it stated that the new SN well is described as a new project for the future, yet it's referenced many, many times throughout the MND as what feels like a current project. So it was very confusing to me to read that. I appreciate the transparency of saying up front that there is a plan to install a new well there. I think that's very important for everybody to know that that's kind of the direction that the agency is going. So I do appreciate that being stated, but I still feel like it should have been the end of that and kept separate and assessed separately later down the road more thoroughly. And I just feel like giving approval to this version of the MND is kind of giving pre-approval for the SN well, and I'm uncomfortable with that. I know the MND states that with the new SN well, there would not be a net increase in the overall annual basin-wide groundwater extraction levels because I read as much as I could. It's replacing the abandoned Mitchell F5A well. But I feel like we need a better understanding of how the additional extraction in that part of the basin will affect, you know, the GDEs in that area. Because I believe the other one was in the Vista Canyon development area, correct? So again, I think it needs a separate, more thorough process of review. You know, and looking at the review document, the responses to comments on the draft document that we received. Under project background, there was the addition that I noticed that says the well-by-well GSP modeling currently identifies this bank of S wells can produce up to 4,288 acre feet per year, depending on hydrologic year type, without resulting in adverse impacts on sustainable groundwater management. And, you know, it says we currently are permitted to pump 6,000 gallons per minute from the current S wells. And if my calculations are correct, that's 9,684 acre feet a year. Does that sound right? I don't, anybody, you feel free to correct me because I could be wrong. That's without an additional well. So, you know, I it's a lot of red flags in my mind. The second thing that I think is kind of an unnecessarily mixed bag is, you know, doing this one vote for the MND and for the final engineering services. I already mentioned that because I don't have an issue with approving the engineering services component of it. Again, we need to move forward with cleaning up our water. So, but not the MND part. Back to the MND, I do want to say thank you for including all of the public comment that was submitted back in December. It was unfortunate that it didn't get sent to the right place, but I'm glad we're able to at least see what the concerns were that were raised by the community members. You know, and I do think there were some good responses to it, but I do think some of the concerns that were brought up by some of the community members do are valid and continue need to be looked at a little bit more. I was especially glad to read the edits to the mitigation measure bio 4 to address the issue for the nesting birds. I thought that was a good response that you all gave. So thank you for that. I also want to say I appreciated the change to the design based on the input from the community members. I was at that one of the public input meetings, and the fact that you recessed it to address those concerns, I think is really a good partnership for the community. And I hope they appreciate that. I think they will. Thank you for incorporating native plants on the backside. I think that's really important. Thank you for collecting the runoff and stormwater. I think it's a good baby step for the agency to be an example of, you know, collecting as much of our water as possible and putting it back in the system. And then just my last comment is I'm glad to see that staff is successfully seeking grant funding for this project and possibly more in the future. I don't know if I'm pushing you too far, but it's always good to get grant funding. So those are my comments. I'm sorry, my comments are a mixed bag too. I just, you know, I support one part, but not quite the other. So thank you.
Any other director comments? I just wanted to make sure I got this side. No, okay, Director Colley.
I would just point out to Kathy that I don't think I heard a second to the motion. And so you would be free to make a motion that includes the half that you want. And we would, I think just as a general thing as well, if any particular director in this board wants to bifurcate the issue out of courtesy, we ought to do that for anyone. So if you want to make a motion for the...
Technically, we should have a second, I agree. And I was allowing some flexibility. As far as how we bifurcate, it's my understanding that we can't take action on the second without adopting the MND first. They're connected. So if the bifurcation is that the well should never have been part of the project, that's a different issue. But as far as the approval of the project, the MND is a necessary element of the project or of approving the project. So why don't we, I probably should have interrupted. Why don't we see if there's a second to Director Cooper's? And then we can also, certainly Director Armitage has the ability to bring a motion of her own if she wants to.
So you don't think it'd be appropriate to have two motions made to start with the CEQA motion and then move on?
You could do that. Yeah, if you'd like to, but you, if you don't approve the CEQA, then you can't move forward with
correct.
The,
okay. The so, second one. So to make it simple, then I will make the motion to approve the mitigated negative deck. And if I can get a second on that, then we can, Director Armitage would be free to vote no on that and then vote yes on the part that she feels is appropriate.
Chair?
Yes.
I think we're making this a bit complicated. Yes.
Substitute motion.
So I would like to second Bill Cooper's motion in this case.
All right. Is there?
I think the agency has done a great job of responding to a public opinion. Comments were received at the very last minute. General manager and staff decided to pull the item and answer all the questions from agencies and the public. We certainly need this facility in our valley, and definitely appreciate all the transparency in these documents. Back to you, Chair.
All right, Mr. Byrne, what would be the procedure? Now we have a second on the first motion, but no second on the second.
I do agree that I think we're overcomplicating.
Yes.
We had a motion, and typically we have a second. If there's a desire to bifurcate, certainly Director Colley, even if I accepted the second, could make a new motion for a substitute motion to do that. I don't know whether the makers of the motion have a problem with taking them separately, but I think that would probably be something that Director Armitage would maybe want to request if there's a desire to vote yes on one and no on the other. But
Mr. Cooper,
to me, they're connected.
Cooper, do you wish to amend your motion?
No. I think.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second, and we have, do we have a second for Director Colley's motion?
Yeah, I didn't hear one. However, there wasn't a lot of time that was offered for that. So why don't we treat that as a substitute motion? If there's a second, we can deal with that first.
I'll second.
All right. Any further discussion? We would be taking action on the substitute motion first.
Which would essentially be whether we're bifurcating or not.
Yes.
So it's not on the merits of what's on the agenda.
So Mr. Byrne, just for clarification, so it's not on the motion he said, which was to approve the mitigated negative declaration.
This is, the motion would be whether to take them separately or not.
Okay. Is that the motion, Director Colley?
That's what you're suggesting, right?
Well, that's the intent, but motion, as I stated it, was simply to approve the mitigated negative deck. And if that is, if folks, and I think the majority of the board, if what I understand, want that to happen, if everybody votes yes on that, absent one, and then we would have somebody to make a motion for the second half, and then presumably, I'm reading the room, I think it would pass unanimously. We get to the same place that I think the majority of the board wants to go, but I'm trying to be sensitive. I think that it's respectful to any board member to be able to bifurcate. You know, these are, while they're linked, they're quite separate questions.
So is his motion acceptable to vote to that he's calling supporting approval of the mitigated negative deck? And that has a second.
We could take a motion on that for sure. Okay. If that motion were to fail, we'd go back to the original motion and we'd take both matters at one time.
Okay. So let's do a roll call vote on the second motion, which is approval of the mitigated negative deck.
Right. And just to be clear, if this fails, you're not voting against approving the negative deck. You would go to the next motion and have an opportunity to vote on it again.
Okay.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Marks.
We're done with public.
Point of order. For sure. Point of order. I need clarification on what we're voting on. Are we voting for to separate the two? And then we vote.
No, we're voting right now to approve the mitigated negative declaration. And if this motion were to fail, we'd go back to the original motion to take them both at one time or to vote on them both together.
Yep.
Okay, understood.
Right.
Please proceed.
We ready?
You can do the roll call.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
No.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
No.
Vice President Ozohowski.
Yes.
Vice President Kutsait.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
The mitigated negative declaration has been approved.
All right, and then at this point, we would need a motion to approve the project.
And just for clarification, that is resolution number SCV-372.
So do we have a motion to approve the project?
I'll second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the approval of the project? Director Colley.
Just to clarify the motion, I believe the motion is not to approve the project, but it is a motion to approve a purchase order to Hazen and Sawyer for the final engineering services for the S-well treatment.
Yes, as stated in the agenda.
As stated in the agenda, yes. Which is not an approval for the project,
It's approval of this phase, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So we have a motion, a second.
Yeah, I do have a separate kind of a question that's related to the project and was related to your presentation. You said that the intent would be to lease the property from the city. I just want to make a comment that if it's possible to do to own that land in fee with that kind of a project on it, I would be much more comfortable with owning the land. While our relationship with the city right now is quite good, as some that have been around for a little longer can tell you, that's not always been the case. The Castaic Lake Water Agency board and the city council were at one time very much at loggerheads and engaged in litigation and all kinds of crap. I would rather not rely on future good relations if possible. And if we could figure out a way to own the land, I would like that to happen. But that's not directly related to the motion on the floor, which I am in favor of.
Any other discussion on the motion on the floor? Go ahead. Director Bronstein.
I had a comment on the issue beforehand that we already voted on. And I just wanted to make it clear that my issue was mainly with the fact that the S9 was included in which is why I voted against it. I think that with the slippery slope of putting additional water sources in, I know that we say we're not going to pump them, but then they appear on our water supply assessment and all that stuff. And then people disagree with why I think we don't have enough water. I know we just had a lot of rain, but in theory. So I have a problem with the fact that we put in something that may or may not happen down the road and we have to vote on it now. So just want to be clear on that.
Any other discussion on the second part of this agenda item that we're voting on? Seeing none, we can call the vote.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Ozuchowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass.
And Vice President Gutzeit, just one thing I'm thinking about procedurally and how to improve. It seems to me that if there's a desire to bifurcate, that if it's unanimous support for that, and we do often in a very informal way say, does anyone have a problem with taking this in two parts? We could do that. If there is a situation where we kind of had a little bit and it wasn't clear, where there may not be a desire to bifurcate, then I think we should vote on whether to take them separately or not. So it's clear. Because it did set up an awkward situation as it was happening. If people voted no, it wasn't clear that about the next step. So in the future, I think I'll talk to Tom, make sure that we handle it that way, if it's okay. If it's not unanimous support, it's not obvious, then we'll vote to separate.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you for the presentation. We will move on to item 6.2, which is approving a resolution authorizing the approval of the preliminary official statement for issuance of the 2023A revenue bond to be presented by Rochelle Patterson.
Good evening. This item is to approve resolution authorizing the approval of the preliminary official statement for the issuance of the 2023 revenue bonds. I would like to take this time to congratulate all of our efforts and staff and consultants and bond counsel for receiving a positive credit rating from S&P. And I would just like to read a couple pieces out of their statement. So the credit highlights: the S&P Global Ratings raised its long-term rating to AA+ from AA on the Upper Santa Clara Valley Joint Power Authority. And that's for the 2020 A and B series bonds. And S&P Global Ratings also assigned its AA+ long-term rating to the Upper Santa Clara Valley Joint Powers Authority for its 2023 A series bonds, which we're talking about tonight. And then in addition, they affirmed their AA plus rating on the agency's existing senior lien certificates of participation, 1999A, and AA plus rating for the agency's parity subordinate lien, COP 2018A. And then just a part of their statement on their credit overview, I thought it would be important to read because it does kind of bring forth all of our efforts. So the rating reflects the agency's sophisticated management and diversified water portfolio, which has provided stability during hydrological challenges. The rating is somewhat tempered by the agency's large capital improvement plan, totaling $680 million over the next 5 years, which is largely driven by PFAS contamination and the agency's groundwater supplies. Management anticipates funding these capital needs through various debt, grant, and cash resources, including WIFIA and state revolving fund loans, which we view favorable considering the flexible low-cost repayment options. The agency serves a large, primarily residential population near Los Angeles. We believe this diverse, affluent customer base provides the agency with flexibility to maintain strong debt service coverage and liquidity reserve metrics despite the elevated CIP. While we believe the system's liquidity reserves will reduce to meet capital needs, ultimately our expectation is that management will continue to have sufficient reserves to meet the agency's 250 days operating expense target. We view positively the agency's plan to address water supply resiliency while tackling PFAS concerns. So that's just a piece of the report from S&P. So then moving on. So to continue with a resolution for the 2023A POS, this process started at the end of last year when staff and consultants began looking at our capital forecast and began bringing financing scenarios to the F&A committee and board of directors. Our February 7, 2023 board of directors meeting approved moving forward with a financing plan we labeled 3A. So in short, the financing scenario 3A included issuing an upfront bond of $75 million, continue work to file a master loan agreement with WIFIA for the agency's 10-year CIP plan, and prepare a cost of service and rate study 1 year earlier than our current schedule in order to increase revenues to PAYGO, the 51% of the agency's 10-year CIP plan, as well as pay for additional debt service associated with new borrowings. On April 4th, 2023, the Board of Directors adopted Resolution SCV-341 that authorized the legal documents for the issuance of the 2023 bond issue. The draft POS was presented to the F&A committee last month and is before you today to approve. The POS discusses material information on the offering that is used by potential investors to evaluate credit quality of and potential risks associated with the bonds, as well as general information on the financial concerns and economic characteristics of the agency. So at this time, I'd like to introduce Laura Nichols, Vice President from Fieldman Roll-Up and Associates, as well as the underwriter for this bond issue, Jeff Sowers, and I hope I got his name right, from Bank of America, to present a short PowerPoint presentation.
Thank you very much, Rochelle. Appreciate the introductions, and good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. It's a pleasure to be here this evening and discuss a very important transaction that we have before you today, which, as Rochelle indicated, is the 2023 revenue bonds, which will be issued to fund approximately $75 million of needed capital improvement projects over the next 2 to 3 year period. Next slide, please. Here on the first slide, I did want to reiterate a few of the items that Rochelle mentioned in her introduction pertaining to the process and tasks completed to date with the finance team in connection with the bonds and in connection with the financial analysis that is currently inserted in the POS or the preliminary official statement documents that you have before you today in your agenda. As Rochelle mentioned, in February 2023, we brought a financial plan to the board to review adjustments to the revenue increases and rate study that was approved pursuant to Prop 218 in the prior few fiscal years. In that financial plan and forecast and revised rate plan, we were utilizing assumptions from the fiscal year 2023 budget. The next month, on March 14th, there was a subsequent announcement by the EPA which identified new PFAS proposed regulations that would adjust the maximum contaminant level for certain PFAS chemicals, which those levels are estimated to be completed by the end of the year or finalized by the end of the calendar year period. However, subsequent to this announcement on March 14th, the agency staff incorporated some of these assumptions into their next fiscal year 2024 budget document, which has since been approved by the board. In April, as Rochelle mentioned, we brought the legal documents of the bond issuance for the 2023 financing to the board for approval. Last month in June, we brought a revised financial plan and the POS document to the Finance Committee for review. The revised financial plan included the adjustment to the assumptions pertaining to, in part, the new PFAS regulation that was announced by EPA again in early March. And again, not yet finalized, but word across the consultants and recommended parties is that that will probably be finalized by the end of the calendar year 2023. And of course, the recent news as of yesterday, that Rochelle mentioned, is the great accomplishment by the board and the agency staff to upgrade the agency's outstanding debt from a AA to a AA+. That is a one-notch upgrade. It now aligns all of your debt outstanding, including the senior lien debt, which already was AA+, to the same rating, which means your new debt that is being issued will also have the rating of AA+. You are in the high AA range, and of course, the highest you can get is AAA, so you're very close to the highest rating in the market. Next slide, please. Here, this slide, we wanted to iterate some of the updated assumptions that I mentioned have occurred since the last financial plan was reviewed by the board back in February, one of which in this first category of capital projects was the increase in capital costs pertaining to the PFAS regulations and that announcement I mentioned that occurred from EPA in March that added almost and up to approximately $160 million in additional PFAS treatment costs. There are also additional capital projects that agency staff has incorporated into the revised five-year CIP plan. And those adjustments, as Rochelle read from the S&P rating report, were also provided to S&P during their review of the bond issuance. In addition to those higher capital costs that were incorporated into the finance plan, the PFAS treatment facilities also required additional operation and maintenance costs to keep up with those ongoing treatment needs. Staff estimated that approximately up to $6.1 million in additional operational and maintenance costs would be incurred over the next five-year period. Those additional costs have also been incorporated into the revised financial plan that is currently shown in the POS document before the board on this agenda. What those two higher cost adjustments have indicated to a revised financial plan is higher than previously reported rate revenue increases to fund those higher costs associated with capital and with O&M. Those higher associated rate increases could be between 10 or potentially even 12%, depending on the financial scenario the board would like to review and approve. We are estimating that the next board meeting in August, the finance team will bring back some of those financial scenarios to the board to review some of the adjustments to the rate plans based off these new and updated cost assumptions. Next slide, please. What we have indicated here on this slide is to dive in a little bit more deeper to a visual aid of what had occurred on the capital side between the analysis, which was classified as scenario 3A, the capital costs that were used in that financial scenario 3A versus today's revised and updated CIP cost. The items or the chart in blue bar graph represents the scenario 3A capital costs. Green represents the current estimated and proposed capital improvement program over the next five-year period. As you can see, there is a dramatic increase from prior assumed cost figures that adjust those costs partially in the first three-year period to the PFAS capital cost. As I mentioned in the prior slide, that is assumed to be approximately $160 million for those additional wells that require PFAS. And then additional projects throughout that remaining five-year period is the main result for that higher increased value. Again, those higher increases of the capital costs are adjusting our financial plan and proposed rates to receive revenue needed to meet those additional costs. Next slide, please. Here on this slide, we want to take the time to review with the board the current and estimated assumptions for issuing your 2023 revenue bonds, again, to fund approximately $75 million of needed capital projects over the next 2 to 3 year period. Traditionally, public agencies such as yourself usually issue long-term debt to fund new money projects over a 30-year period. However, the agency in today's market has an opportunity to minimize its interest expense on bond financings by shortening that term, such as shortening that 30-year term to a 15-year, even 13-year scenario. We've added here in the middle of the slide a visual effect that compares a traditional 30-year term based off today's market conditions as of July 11th, compared to a shorter-year terms assuming a 15-year and a 13-year term. All three of these scenarios do reflect funding the $75 million of capital needs in addition to the financing cost to issue the debt. If you revert your eyes to the yellow highlighted columns on the chart, I wanted to reference the borrowing cost. So if you compare a 30-year traditional bond issuance in today's market, that's approximately 4.36%. The agency would receive almost a 1% reduction in that borrowing cost to 3.3% by shortening the bond issuance to a 15-year term. Next column to the right, you see an additional reduction of approximately 0.3% were the agency to issue a 13-year term debt. And what does that mean in dollars? That is an approximately $50 million reduction in total gross debt service by going with a shorter 15-year term, or approximately $55.7 million gross reduction in interest expense for a 13-year term. Now, what does this mean in comparison to what was initially assumed in the previous scenario 3A scenarios? When we reviewed the finance plan with the board, we have that discussion or that chart at the bottom of your slide here. Scenario 3A did assume a 30-year term. That approximate interest expense over the next 5 year period was around $3.7 million. If you compare those costs to today's market conditions as of July 11th over a shorter term of 13 years, you see there is still a benefit in comparison to the prior analysis. The current or the next proposed 5 years is a lower reduced interest expense on the bonds. Current assumptions is approximately $3.1 million. So the bond issuance that we are reviewing with staff and that we'll be issuing come market pricing in a few more weeks, following approval today with the board, will actually have a lower cost than what had been reviewed with the board earlier in the year. The change in term of the bonds will not affect any of the rate increase assumptions. The only driver of the higher rate increase in the rate plan is pursuant to the higher cost pertaining to capital, as well as the higher cost pertaining to operation and maintenance. Next slide, please. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation slide over to Jeff Sowers from the underwriting team to review with the board some of today's market conditions and what we can expect going forward in pricing. Jeff.
Thanks, Laura. Good evening, members of the board. On page six, we have four charts here, but I'm going to address the left side first, which provides an overview of rates what's currently driving interest rates from a 30,000 foot view. And then on the right side, we have two charts that are going to contextualize the agency's upcoming offering in the current market conditions. So on the left, what's really driving interest rates over the last few years has been the Federal Reserve and its fight against inflation. I'm sure as you all are aware, costs of goods and services have gone up. That's primarily being driven by higher wage costs, increases in commodity costs, and all that's flowing into the finished cost of goods and services. And fortunately, the United States has been printing the highest CIP numbers over the last year since the early 1980s. So that's really kicked the Federal Reserve's into action, and their primary tool for combating inflation is obviously to increase its cost of capital, or the Federal federal funds rate, which is the rate that banks borrow from the Federal Reserve at. That tool primarily affects short-term interest rates. So over the last year, we've seen the Federal Reserve increase their benchmark cost of funds by 0.75%. But long-term rates, which are shown on the chart on the top left, where have remained range bound. They've fluctuated no more than 0.5% year to date. So the Federal Reserve is increasing rates, but markets on the long term are not fully absorbing those rate increases. That creates an opportunity and a bright spot for the agency to take advantage of, and that's what's shown on the chart on the top right, where the blue line represents the tax exempt municipal market data MMD or MMD curve. It's the benchmark cost of funds for government tax exempt borrowers. And what it represents is the cost of funds for a AAA rated general obligation bond issuer if it borrowed at various terms. So the terms are from 1 to 30 years. And for the agency's debt, our upcoming offering, we've overlaid where it's going to be amortizing bonds in between years 8 and 13 in the gray bars. And as you can see, it's right in the range of where the yield curve currently offers rates that are lower than short-term rates. So as you can see, the front part of the yield curve is elevated, and then it dips down, and then gradually rises out to the 30-year term. So all of the Federal Reserve rate action has been impacting that first 2 to 3 years of the interest rate curve most significantly. But for the agency's transaction, it's a little bit, it's not completely immune, but it's certainly buffered given where that it has the ability to amortize debt from the immediate Federal Reserve actions that have taken place this year. And on the bottom right, we have this chart in here because it's often asked, hey, is this the right time to access the market? Should we be coming now? Should we wait? Should we have priced earlier? And those crystal ball questions are always like very, very difficult to answer. But this chart below presents what we believe is strong justification for going into the market in August of this year. And what these bars represent are principal and coupon redemptions for tax-exempt securities. And what that means is that it's cash that's flowing back to investors in this specific market, in the California tax-exempt municipal market. And for August, those redemptions are projected by B of A Global Research to be around $16 billion. That's a significant sum, and our research does not expect that California new issue for municipal securities is going to outpace that $16 billion mark. So what that creates is a negative new issue supply, or basically a very strong favorable supply-demand dynamic for issuers entering the market. There's essentially the opportunity for more dollars to chase less bonds in the market, and that's why we're looking towards August for pricing for the agency's upcoming offering. So with that, I'll turn over to John Guz to talk about the preliminary official statement.
Thanks, Jeff. Next slide, please. Good evening, members of the board. My name is John Guz. I'm with Stradling, Yoka, Carlson, and Routh, and we serve as Bond and Disclosure Counsel. Before each of the boards of the agency and the authority this evening is a resolution approving the preliminary official statement. The preliminary official statement is a disclosure document that is provided by the underwriter of the bonds to potential investors in the bonds. And the document describes provisions of the bonds that are to be sold, things such as, you know, the interest payment dates, redemption provisions, things of that nature. It also provides a description of the legal documents pursuant to which the agency has pledged its water revenues, which will eventually be used to, you know, repay the bonds that are to be issued. It provides certain considerations and risk factors that investors should be mindful of when making a decision whether or not to invest in the bonds. Also included as an appendix to the document is a description of the agency. And it provides information relating to things such as, you know, the operating results of the agency, financial information about the agency, descriptions of, you know, water sources, agency facilities, things of that nature, as well as other information that's material to investors when they're making a determination whether or not to purchase the bonds. It should be noted that the preliminary official statement and the information provided therein is subject to federal securities law. So that means that the information should be accurate, complete. It should not contain any misstatements of material fact or omit any material factual information. The resolutions that will be considered by the respective boards will authorize the preparation and distribution of preliminary official statement, as well as the preparation and distribution of a final official statement, which will be an update to the preliminary official statement, and it will include information that is determined on the date of pricing, such as the final par amount of the bonds, the interest rates, maturity dates, things like that. The resolutions will also allow for the distribution of the document to the underwriters, who will then provide the POS to potential investors, and then the official statement will be provided to the actual purchasers of the bonds. In the resolutions, it authorizes certain portions of the document, depending upon which agency is taking, or which entity is taking action. The agency resolution will approve the agency portion, which is that agency appendix, which I described earlier, the audited financial statements for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2022, as well as the form of the continuing disclosure certificate. The authority portion that will be approved represents all the other portions of the preliminary official statement. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Laura.
Thanks very much, John. Next and final slide here on slide 8, we wanted to provide the board with an overview of the remaining steps and actions to be taken to price and close a transaction. We have already received the S&P rating that will be posted on the POS when we post it tomorrow. Today is the consideration of the final approval necessary to proceed with posting and marketing the debt, which is the preliminary official statement before you today, being approved first by the agency, and then the second meeting will be the JPA board. Following tomorrow's posting of the POS, it will allow the B of A marketing team and the banking team to reach out to investors and begin to market the bonds over the week and a half period up until the proposed pricing date on August 1st. August 1st, once the bonds are sold, the agency staff will be executing a purchase agreement, and then that will hold the rates fixed through closing, estimated to be August 8th. And on August 8th, the agency will receive all funding from the debt, which includes the new money for the $75 million projects. And that concludes our presentation for this evening. We're happy to answer any questions from the board.
All right, thank you. First, let's see if there's any public comment on this item.
There is not.
All right, we will move on to director comments. Any director comments or questions on this? Seeing none over here, Director Colley.
Could we go back to slide number 5? I think it was in the little right corner, the little green number. Pull that back up. Appreciate it. I'd like somebody to explain to me why every member of this board should not be extremely annoyed. The maximum debt service I see on the chart above is $15 million for a 13-year term. Then cherry-picked are the first, what is that, 6 years showing payments of slightly over $3 million. And the reader of this is given no idea when the payments will increase from to slightly over 3 million, fivefold to $15 million at some future time. Am I reading this chart wrong? And is this the bottom not sort of cherry picked and trying to sell us on this great benefit that we have for the next 6 years, lower payments, and then presumably, I guess, some future board that maybe we won't be here anymore. They're going to be saddled with a $15 million payment. Am I misunderstanding anything?
Director Colley, thank you for pointing that out. That's a great question. Our intent for the 5-6 year amortization showing the interest expense was to be responsive to Director Gutzeit's questions in the Finance Committee meeting in connection with how does this reduction in term from 30-year term to a 13-year term affect proposed 5-year rates over a next 5-year period. So we wanted to focus solely on the 5-year period pertaining to any new rate proposed Prop 218 study by the agency's board. You are correct that after the interest-only period concludes, which I believe goes through fiscal year 2032, there are principal amortization schedules, which Jeff Sowers went over briefly in his presentation as well. Those are estimated to amortize the remaining portion of the needed debt through fiscal year 2036. Those payments are also wrapped around the agency's outstanding debt in connection with it, when there's a large drop-off in your debt following the conclusion and final maturity of your 1999 CABS, which allows availability of over $10 million of debt service costs following that final maturity in 2033, I believe.
You mentioned some other part of the presentation. Can you point to when that or what that was?
On the next slide, just as a brief overview on the top right-hand corner of this slide, we do have the proposed potential principal amounts. This does not include the interest expense associated with those maturities, but you see around where that debt service principal will be amortized within that 13-year term.
Okay, so there, all right. So for the first, my eyes aren't, I mean, they're 66 years old and they're not very good, but it looks like for the first 7 or 8 years, the intent would be to pay no principal, paying interest only, and then saddling the board on year 8 or so from 8 to 13 with paying off the principal. Is that what I'm to read in that top right chart?
Correct.
Okay. Wow. I think everyone on this board ought to be, to gloss over that in this presentation to me is very annoying. My feeling is that staff and board ought to be more in concert where we're not, there's not an attempt to sort of gloss over and put in an eye chart in that top right that we're not even paying any principal for the first half or more of this debt issuance. And I didn't see anything at all in any of these presentations where that keyed in with our the drop off and in our payments of current debt, but we also are intending to incur future debt in these WIFIA bonds, and so that too is nobody showed me where that's going to key in. Anyway, I just want to go on record to say that at least I do not like a presentation like this where it seems as though we're trying to gloss over some very, very important information. As far as issuing debt right at the moment, I note that next week the federal funds rate is virtually certain to go up the 25 basis points, but the vast majority, maybe not the vast majority, a lot of folks, and me included, believe that the Fed will pause the rate hikes and may even not do any further rate hikes over the next significant time period, and may eventually, and it's almost certain eventually, to bring them back down. We recently had another yield curve inversion. While a lot of people don't think that we're going to be in a recession, I don't share that view. I think that a recession is likely. And I think that holding off on issuing debt right now would be a very prudent thing to do. Locking ourselves into 10 years of these interest rates, we just don't need to do it. We have huge reserves. I know that if you sort of read between the lines on what the rating agencies are telling us, it's typical. They're saying that you don't really need to borrow money, and so your ability to borrow money goes way up when you don't need to. We have sufficient reserves that we can start on these capital projects and presumably use the WIFIA lending in the relative near future. And we're already planning on a rate increase in the near future, which I think is something we need to do, although painful. And so I remain convinced that issuing debt at this moment is not in our best interest. Thank you.
Do we have any other director questions or comments?
Just to note, director or acting president and vice president Gutzeit, with regards to the first part of Director Cawley's comment, we normally do show a chart with those different outstanding debt issuances kind of wrapped around one another and what that cash flow is. And so Rochelle is out trying to track down a representative current version of that we could share with the board. That is not an intentional omission, and I don't particularly appreciate the illusions that it was. Mm-hmm. But to be fair, it is something that we can provide that information on. And I will respectfully disagree about trying to play the game of timing debt. I think our 2020 discussion about that issue has played out very well for the agency.
Thank you. And I will also say, in terms of why these 5 years were mentioned, it did come up at Finance Committee. The last presentation talked about these options for the shorter terms. And I asked if that was going to presuppose the board needing to do something specific on rates when it comes before us. And they pointed out that actually in the near term, it would be a savings over what we already looked at. So it wasn't, their new options that they came up with wasn't going to force the board's hand on any rate decisions, was the point of that table. The lower table, and then the upper table, I guess I was channeling a little bit of Dan Mortensen from both Newhall and here. He'd love to look at the substantial interest savings, and that points that out in the table. So, you know, they will make that decision. But I do think it is interesting, the huge savings. So any other questions or comments? Do we want to wait for that, or
Director? I think we can take other questions, and okay. I see Rochelle is working with April to try to get that chart up.
President Orzechowski.
Vice President Gutzeit, Acting Chair, I agree with your sentiment, and I agree with the assessment by the GM. This is an opportunity here, I definitely support taking it. That's it for me. Yes. So, well, actually, let's wait until Ms. Patterson is able to pull up a chart. And then after that, I'll be more than happy to make a motion. Back to you, Chair.
Laura, is it okay if we show this from the ratings presentation?
Yes, the existing and proposed projected debt service, correct. Yes. I think that's a good representation of the debt outstanding and proposed 2023 bonds. So what we have here on this slide was presented to S&P during our rating discussions. The items that are colored in a darker format represent the agency's existing debt. We have the outstanding senior lien 1999 CABS. We have as well the outstanding 2018 debt, the 2020A debt, as well as the 2022B series. Layered on top is a turquoise color, which represents the estimated 2023 bonds, assuming a 13-year shorter amortization. As you can see, that wrapping where the principal starts to be amortized in 2032 through 2037 fiscal year occurs directly after the final maturity of the 1999 CABS. Once that $10.5 million is paid and concluded, we start amortizing the new debt for 2023 series. The additional layered graphical light toned charts represents the proposed new debt that might be issued over the next 5-year period, which includes the WIFIA loan transactions that are currently being reviewed with EPA. We have assumed two separate WIFIA loans issued in two different fiscal years over a 35-year period. We've also assumed in a very light color blue additional bond issuances to fund remaining capital costs for the 10-year CIP program.
Director,
so I could walk you through it if you want, Director Cawley. Did you get that? The left side, the blue bars across the very bottom on the left, those are the 1999 CABS. Okay, and those have been with us since I've been here in 2015, and we always are trying to wrap around them because we have these $10 million payments through that stream of years. And so you'll notice the green issuance right above it also somewhat wraps around it with lower payments during that period and then ramps up a bit after. And what we're proposing to do with that blue one above the purple is use that space as well and not hit us with as much principal repayment while we're paying off that other principal and then flip it over to this. I believe I don't know what the interest rate is on the CABS, but I think that also is we're paying a lower interest rate on the newer issuance while we're waiting to make those principal payments. So it is kind of a holistic approach to try to time the various payments and then also take advantage of the WIFIA funding coming in at a lower rate. And also you're not having to carry the costs as long. You can incur the interest as you're incurring the costs. You're not having to issue the entire amount up front. So that's the effort. And normally we do have this in the presentation, and my apologies if we missed putting in there, and I can assure you it was not to try to hide anything. This is, I think we've shown something like this in other issuances. So.
Director Cooper had his hand up.
Thank you, Vice President Gutzeit. And what I wanted to do is to provide a second to Director Orzechowski's motion. This financing is important to the agency. This is going to be some of the funding to help us bring PFAS rehabilitation, some of our wells. May we get some of this reimbursed by the lawsuit? We don't know. We don't know where that's going to stand, but it looks like we might get something. But this is money to help our water supply and bring that back into where it should be. So I think this is very important, and I second Director Orzechowski's motion.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, we can call the roll. Roll call vote.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Cauley.
No.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Ozohowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that's resolution number SCV-373.
Thank you. All right, we will move on. Make sure I'm on the right one. We will move on to action item 6.3. Okay. This is a resolution for construction contract for underground storage tank replacement, a purchase order for engineering services, and also a separate purchase order for construction management, and a finding that the contract agreement is exempt from CEQA. This will be presented by Wai Lan Lee. I hope I pronounced that correctly.
April, do we have her on?
I'm moving her over. She was in the attendees, so I just moved her over.
No sweat.
Well, I think she hung up. Maybe she's calling in on the panelist line. I don't see her. Oh, there she is.
Hi. Good evening, board members. Sorry, a little bit technical glitch here. Okay, good evening. My name is Wai Lan Lee, and I'm an engineer in the SCV Water. The purpose of this evening presentation is to seek approval of a resolution of awarding a construction contract to Fleming Environmental Inc. and authorize joint purchase orders to Lee and Rowe and Kennedy Jane Consultant Inc. for the rear vista water treatment plant underground diesel fuel tank replacement improvement project. Next slide, please. Next slide. So this is the map that shows the underground fuel tank location. It is located in the Rio Vista water treatment plant. And this fuel tank is serving the standby generator. And this standby generator is serving the treatment plant as well as the administrative building. Next slide, please. So, the purpose of this project is to replace the existing underground storage fuel tank and the day tank, as you can see on this picture. The day tank is on the picture, and this existing generator. We are remaining this existing generator. So the underground fuel tank and the day tank is reaching the end of the useful life. So this replacement project is a proactive action to ensure our facility is in the good functionality. Next slide, please. So this is a 3D rendering for the proposed above ground storage tank. So the existing underground fuel tank is under this above ground tank right now. And this above ground tank will provide easier access and maintenance to the storage tank. So during the E&O committee meeting, the committee member has a question regarding the fuel tank secondary containment requirement and the project design. So the secondary containment capacity requirement is not specifically have an outline, but normally there are two ways to design to size the containment. One way is based on the 110% of the fuel capacity. The other way is to use the rainfall criterion. So the proposed tank is an AST tank that has already a secondary spill containment with a capacity of 110% volume. In addition to that, our agency had asked the design engineer to provide an outside containment area. As you can see in this picture, that as a concrete curb around this tank. This is an earlier design. So in the final design, we have raised this curb to a 4-foot high wall to provide the additional containment volume to protect any spill emergency happen. Next slide. So this project was advertised on PanelBit on February 23rd, 2023, and bid were electronically open on May 31st, 2023. There were two bids received from the project from the Fleming Environmental Inc. and Pacific Hydrotech Corporation. Fleming and Environmental Inc. is a lower bidder, and the bid amount is $1.39 million, which is compatible to the engineering estimate of $1.31 million. Fleming Engineering Inc. has experience working on the underground as well as the above ground fuel storage tank, and have good recommendation from the consultant of their works. This project will continue SCV Water Strategic Plan Objective B.5.1, maintain all facility and appurtenance in a consistent fashion to achieve operational efficiency and functionality. Next slide, please. So Liam Rowe, as the design engineer, will be providing engineering services during construction, which include reviewing submittal RFI and attending construction meetings. Also, they are responsible to prepare the record drawing and supporting project closeout. Next slide, please. Kennedy James Consultant Inc. will provide construction management, test inspection services, and material testing for this project. So during the E&O meeting, we also received another question regarding the current project spending and the total project cost. So as a current spending, the project has $200,000 spent on the project, and total estimate cost is $2.2 million, which including the current spending, construction costs, construction management, and engineering services during construction. We had included the information in tonight's package for your review. Next slide, please. So this slide showed the project schedule. So project has presented in the July 6, 2023 engineering and operation meeting. And tonight we are presenting on the board meeting. If the board approves, staff will issue the notice to proceed to the contractor and consultant. The construction of this project should be expected to be completed in September 2024. Next slide, please. So to conclude, we recommend firstly, approve adoption of the resolution awarding a contract to Fleming Environmental Inc. for the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Underground Storage Fuel Tank Replacement Project Improvement for $1,388,711. Secondly, authorize the general manager to execute a purchase order for engineering services during construction with Lee and Rowe for an amount not to exceed $210,000. Thirdly, authorize general manager to execute a purchase order for construction management and inspection services with Kennedy James Consultant Inc. for an amount not to exceed $405,000. Lastly, fund this project qualify an exemption under the CEQA guideline section 15301 for minor alteration of an existing public facility, and alternatively qualify an exemption under CEQA guideline section 15302 for replacement of a existing facility where a new facility will be located on the same site as the facility replaced and will have substantially the same purpose and capacity as the facility replaced. This concludes my presentation. Thank you. And with that, I will bring it back to you, the director.
Thank you for your presentation. Do we have any public comment on this item?
We do, just from President Martin, but no public comment.
All right. We'll move to director comments. And why don't we do Director President Martin first. It's a little difficult to see his hand raising, so I don't want to overlook that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Wailan, for the presentation. The Fleming name is a new one on me. Have we worked with them before?
We have not, but I have checked with our consultant. They did have worked with them, and they have a good recommendation with their work. And their resume show they have been working with a lot of underground and above ground storage tank.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Do we have any, Director Cooper?
This was reviewed at the Engineering and Operations Committee and comes with the committee's recommendation. This would have normally been an item. It's a very simple engineering project. Would have come onto consent calendar, but because of the cost at about $1.5 million, we decided to bring that on as an action item. So with that, if there are no other questions, I would so move the staff recommendation.
Okay, do we have any other questions or I see several down here. Director Marks.
Ask for a second, I think.
I was going to second the motion.
All right, we have a second from Director Marks, the timely. Director Orzechowski.
So quick question. This is for Mr. Courtney Mayo. So I didn't bring it up during the ENO committee meeting, but 1.5, total cost for this tank. These costs are going up, for public sector works, and I've seen it in the private sector too. In your opinion, how much would this project cost 10 years ago? I mean, just a rough estimate.
That's pretty rough to speculate, actually. I am not sure how much that would cost, or if we would be doing a similar project, or if we would be trying to duplicate something below ground 10 years ago. It may have been that would have been the approach we would have taken. Now, with safety concerns and additional consideration, we do above ground tanks, double lined, a lot more consideration in them. So 10 years ago, with a more easier standard, I would say it would be probably a third of the cost, rough estimate.
From what you've seen so far, and the reason I pose this question is for directors in particular, because we're going to be thinking about strategic plans here in the short term. Have you seen costs for materials, labor, services go up dramatically? Not necessarily exponentially, but to the point where that it's concerning.
I think definitely. I think we've seen that in our well drilling projects that significantly almost tripled in cost for the Saugus 3 and 4 wells in the short time frame between bidding within a short period of about 3 years. We are definitely seeing that in material costs for some of our projects, and our increase in our PFAS treatment projects are definitely seeing some significant increases that we are factoring into our costs moving forward and trying to control those measures as much as possible.
Understood. Thank you for your efforts. That's all I have. Back to you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Mayo.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, I do have one before you sit down. And I did have a couple of emailed questions that you helped me with, so thank you for that. But hearing this presentation, I did not ask what happens to the underground tank.
We have to have it removed. We will remove and then demolish it ultimately.
Okay, so is that part of the cost? I didn't.
It is.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's good. It didn't really, but if it's in here, I missed it, but I wanted to make sure that was being done.
It will be fully removed as part of this project.
Okay, and I'll just say a lot of places have these double wall tanks. It's pretty common, and I do talk about material costs. I think extra outdoor containment is not necessary because you would see it seeping most likely. There's usually interstitial space that you can check, and then two, if it what the outer one was going to fail, you would see it seeping rather than gushing. But if we want to be extra careful, that's great, but
yeah,
it is I'm sure an added cost for added concrete.
For the additional concrete, it was a small cost for an additional safety measure.
Okay, good. All right. Okay, seeing no other hands raised, we will go to a roll call vote for this.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
Yes.
Vice President Ozahowski.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass, and that's resolution number SCV-374.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I am now going to make the announcement that we have passed to 9 o'clock. We are done with the action items, though. So I just want to make everybody aware that we're past 9 o'clock and we do have a JPA meeting after this. So I would like to keep going, but briefly, if possible. Thank you.
Yep, keep going.
Well, I was looking at you for the next one is general manager's report.
Okay, and you stole half of my report because my first line was going to be item one is it's 9:07 p.m.
Okay.
And item two is therefore I will have a extremely abbreviated report. And I just want to use the little time that I'm going to take to thank our staff tonight, for Orlando and the rest of the team. For your work in trying to address the comments that we did get on the PFAS project and try to provide as much clarity as we could on the various aspects of that. I appreciate that extra effort. For Rochelle and our entire financing team and our engineering group that helped on trying to get numbers in, and our team that did the rating agency presentation, a number of whom it was their first go around or second, all good seasoning and a hearty congratulations on the success of that and on the upgrade that the agency received. And the board deserves credit for that as well, because it is the overall governance and management and operation of the agency that they look at, as well as the fiscal provisions. And that concludes my report.
Thank you.
Oh, and Wylon Lay for the shortest action item of the night.
Yes, thank you. And yeah, thank you for all of your comments about, we've been doing some big lifts here and duly noted. The next one is committee meeting recap reports for information purposes only. There's one report in your packet. Oh, I believe I was remiss in asking, do we have any public comment on the general manager report?
We do not.
Okay. And I didn't see any hands raised on directors. So we'll move on to eight, committee meeting recap reports. There's one report in your packet. Any public comments on that report?
There is not.
All right. Any director comments? Seeing none. President's report. We have the president's report written in your agenda, the revised agenda. And we can also, I think it's in the agenda. It's in my handout. We can also email that out, right, April?
We can email it out, but it was just for you because you read it that night, but I can send it out tomorrow.
I'm going to forego reading it. It's just the updated dates on our committee meetings and conferences and events. So we'll just do that by email. We will move on to, or very near the end, we have the JPA after this. That includes Vice President Armitage and Directors Cooper, Martin, Orzechowski, and myself. Do we have any public comment on these issues? The president's report, which will be emailed, and yeah, okay. Okay, thank you. Item 10 is AB1234 report. Does anyone have any AB1234? Director Cooper.
Just two quick ones. July 11th, I had the Aqua Executive Board Finance Committee. It was a Zoom meeting. And then on July 13th, we had the Aqua Region 8 program.
Okay, thank you. I see Director Martin, President Martin.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I did have a meeting on July 14th via Zoom. It was the DCA board briefing that they conduct once a month. They provided a monthly report. They provided environmental update, a budget update, and a presentation of project outreach efforts. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Director Armitage?
Thank you. So I also attended the Aqua Region 8 meeting on July 13th, hosted by West Basin Municipal District at their really interesting Edward C. Little Water Recycling Facility in El Segundo. I'll give a little brief summary for both of us. How's that?
I knew you would.
It was nice to see Aqua leadership come down and join us here in Region 8. We were warmly greeted by Gloria Gray, Pam Tobin, and Dave Egerton. And we also heard from Kathy Green and Director Cooper. I said her name right, Kathy Green?
Yes.
Okay. And Director Cooper also had addressed the members there. The keynote speaker was Bill Hassenkamp, who spoke about the negotiations that have been happening with the water from the Colorado River. That was really fascinating. And then there was a panel discussion with three general managers and Jennifer Pierre from the state water contractors, who talked about the challenges in meeting water supply in what feels like perpetual dryness here in California, storage issues in wet years, and the need to improve local resources and connectivity between those local resources, and then ideas around legislation and policies to help fill the identified gaps. I will say my own little personal commentaries, I felt it was a little unfortunate that they ended it with a few minutes of what I thought were some generalities that were unfair against the environmental community. again, my personal commentary. But a highlight of the event was the tour of the water recycling facility. Their district puts out five different types of recycled water, which I was highly fascinated with because they have various types of recycled water customers, two of which are oil refineries in the area. So they have to specifically make sure that that recycled water has very specific, is processed specifically, I should say. And once again, I was reminded of how unflattering it is to wear hairnets and hard hats and safety goggles. But we were safe while we toured the facility. So overall informative. Thank you to Director Cooper and the rest of the board of Region 8 for a good event. And then secondly, and much less shorter, on July 12th, there was a virtual meeting of the Executive Committee of the Special Districts Association of North LA County. We debriefed about the last general membership meeting. We discussed procedures for elections for the next time a new board is selected. We talked about the need for a simple strategic plan. And then we began planning for the next general membership meeting, which is tentatively scheduled for October 12th. And that is it. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Marks.
On July 17th, I had a virtual meeting with the general manager.
Thank you. Any other directors? No, I did have my one-on-one with Matt Stone yesterday, but I will not be seeking reimbursement because it overlapped with the finance committee. So I don't think I need to do AB 1234 for that. All right. Any public comment on the AB 1234 reports?
There is not.
All right. We will move on to director requests for future agenda items. Are there any requests for future agenda items, Director Colley?
Yeah, I'd like to request something that we haven't done in the 20 years I was on the CLWA and this board, but I think it's something we ought to do. I would like to see a future agenda item to consider the possibility of naming one of our facilities, or one or more, I guess, of our facilities for an individual that I think has contributed an awful lot. Specifically, well, I don't want it to be appear on the agenda this way necessarily, but I think that we ought to consider the possibility of naming our yet to be named to by an individual, to an individual's name, this treatment plant and the in Jerry Glideback's name. I'd like to consider that as something that we could do in the future. Anyway, that would be my hope, is to have a future agenda item to consider doing that.
All right, thank you. Do we have any other future agenda items? Is there any public comment on future agenda items?
There is not.
All right, we have reached adjournment. Just a reminder that the JPA meeting will follow this meeting. Thank you all.